Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hey, it's Aaron, and before we jump into this next episode of Innovation Calling, I wanted to make sure that you knew you were invited to our next live podcast recording event, which is happening June 4th. This is for our Women in Tech Leadership series. We'll be at City Central right off the tollway once again in the Dallas area. And on this episode, we're going to be welcoming Kristen Twenging, who's a vice president over at HPE. So we'll be starting at 5:30 for some wine, some networking, some food, and we'll start that podcast recording at 6:30. So hopefully we will see you there. You can jump over to innovationcalling.com to grab those tickets today. Now, on today's episode, this is a fun one. We had an opportunity to sit with Nick Hughes, who is the founder of Founders Live. So Nick has a vast experience and history in startups and entrepreneurship. And back about 5 years ago in the Seattle area, he wanted to put a new twist to pitches and just the way startups were getting in front of other people and showcasing their business. So he put together his own networking slash pitch event and grew it organically over the last few years. Now, this year, he's really starting to see explosive growth. And at the end of 2019, Founders Live will be literally all over the world and in about 100 cities. So we got to talk a lot about different things like startups in general, how innovation labs can, this opportunity that they have now because of Nick's company and how they can find new companies and new technologies, and just the startup world as a whole when it comes to innovation in tech. And I hope you enjoy this episode with Nick Hughes. All right. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat. So,
Nick Hughes is here, so Sia, go ahead.
I'm super excited. That's my tagline. I'm super excited, by the way. But I am genuinely excited. Yeah. So we just finished off a week of Dallas Startup Week, and I, being the hard-charging, introduce myself to any random person that'll talk to me, ran into Mr. Nick Hughes with Founders Live Media. And Nick, thank you and welcome to Innovation Calling.
Thank you. And I'm excited to be here. And hey, let's have a great conversation.
And we will. Yeah,
we will have good conversations.
So, you know, what struck me about you when we first met was it's a social hour. We just celebrated the win, which, hey, props to Leslie Flores at Moments by Design. She is a actual regular roundtable attendee of ours.
Really great.
And what I wanted to ask you about was, we were having a lot of fun, beer and wine was flowing, and you just had this amazing composure and discipline about yourself. It was almost like this aura. And I guess help me understand Founders Live and exactly what it is first, because you have a zen-like quality that kind of, how should I call it? It's like it flows through your organization.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking that. And, you know, I'll touch on Founders Live first, and then we can dive into how I prepare and actually energetically how I set myself up to, I get, you know, not only perform, but just be present during the events. But real quick, you know, Founders Live is a global platform and community for entrepreneurship. And we really aim to inspire, educate, and entertain early stage entrepreneurship around the world. If you allow me to go into a little bit of background, I think this will set the table for our entire conversation and where we're going. So roughly 5 years ago, I started an event in Seattle. So the event that we were at on Thursday during Startup Week here in Dallas, crazy enough, that event that I started 5 years ago was very similar. Like, the format has not changed. But, you know, I was in Seattle and just wanted to bring people together, have a good time, and highlight the talent in the city. And so this was really just going to be a one-off event. And so, you know, gather people together, have food and drink, music. And then we pre-selected five companies to pitch. So we had a pitch competition. Even back then, I determined, let's have them only talk for 99 seconds. Why 99? Just why not? I think it's unique. So 99-second pitch. They can flip through slides. They're really just up on the stage telling us what they're working on and why it's important. And then right after that, there's 4 minutes of Q&A with the audience. So the audience can ask questions, you know, what's the business model? Who's your competition? Essentially anything. So it's really an open kind of town hall style experience. Then at the end, after the five presenting startups do their thing, the crowd votes on which one they thought was the best. And so we did that 5 years ago. So it was March 2014. And it was just a really, people loved it. It was a hit. So I kept holding that event in Seattle every month. There was no, it wasn't even called Founders Live. There was no model. We were just having a good time. And in 2016, I realized after a couple of years, like this was growing and there was something interesting here. I realized a couple of things. Number one, this could work in other cities. But more importantly, I looked at the global entrepreneurial ecosystem around the world. I noticed that it was very disconnected. I noticed that, you know, when you're in Seattle, you don't really know what's coming out of Dallas, like from an early stage startup component or talent or just really creative things. Or Nairobi, Kenya, or, you know, Buenos Aires, Argentina. So I launched Founders Live to not only connect the world globally on an early stage entrepreneurial ecosystem, but then to bring the opportunities that are more available to us here in the US to the corners of the world that there are talented people, but they just don't have the opportunities that we do or the money or the connections or whatever. And so, yeah, launched it in 2016 and it's been really great. So we have an online component that is like a social network that's really fun. A lot of entrepreneurs are connecting, getting educated, being inspired. But then the events that also happen, we're now in like 35 cities globally. We're growing very rapidly. And these really are celebrations of entrepreneurship that not only bring people together locally in that city, but then highlight the talent. And as we start live streaming around the world, you can imagine now, you know, an event that has a couple hundred people in that room, but maybe that startup is actually pitching to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that are watching and listening globally that could end up being possible investors, possible corporate partners, acquisition opportunities, investors. And that's where we see entrepreneurship going through Founders Live.
So can I ask about growth? Because you made a great point.
Yeah.
Living in Seattle, I don't really know, you know, it's hard to get a pulse on a Dallas scene or worldwide scene. So talk about your challenge in overcoming those. In obviously you grew a business with you kind of in the city. You knew people. It was easy from Seattle's perspective. I don't want to say it was easy. That was bad to say. But how have you, because it's a challenge to go and worldwide. What's your strategy and how are you overcoming that?
It's a really good question. So our model, you know, when you look at the events, our events are organized locally through what we would say they're ambassadors, but we call them city leaders. As we are, you know, we're roughly in 35 cities. We have another 10, 15 that are lined up. The dominoes are really lined up. And we're, I mean, it's just accelerated growth. But these people are all referred to us in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, just like the event in last week here in Dallas, I had people come up to me talk about Brazil. I had people come up and talk to me about, you know, Asia. So like, you know, Japan, China. We are launching in Singapore soon. We are launching in Manila, Philippines. But when you look at just like the areas of the world, people will come up and say, hey, this is amazing. I have someone that I think you should meet in XYZ city. And so that's mostly how we've expanded. So then I get introduced to them. We have a couple of interviews, phone calls, and we onboard them as we call them city leaders, and they sign an agreement, and then they're off and running to essentially establish the event and launch it in that city. So it's very, very grassroots. And I believe that that right now is the most important the most important way to grow from cost efficiency, but also impact. You know, if you have an organic grassroots growth, that means it's really meaningful and people want it to be there. And then it's grown through the leaders in those cities versus like top down where we're trying to push it into a community. It really is pulled into a community and actually grown organically.
So are these ambassadors, are they actual employees or are they volunteers?
They are volunteers. And they, for instance, David here in Dallas, you know, he's a part of our city leader team. And someone like that views being a part of Founders Live as just an ability to be a part of something bigger, to establish their leadership in their community, to, you know, you do this for a couple of years in your city and you are highly connected, because just as you organize and run the event, and if you understand, like every month there's five new early stage companies. These are founders. These are people doing incredible things. So you run this for a couple of years in your city and you're connected to hundreds of potential partners, or at some point, if you do need a job, you know, many different founders and leaders that are possibly hiring. It's a massive network growth. That those are the intangibles that our city leaders see, and they're like, of course, why would I not want to?
Why not sign me up?
And that's just being a part of something really fun and cool anyway.
Right. So is this basically like a entrepreneurial startup TEDx equivalent?
You got it. That's a handful of example models from an organization that we look at, and TEDx definitely. So rather than, you know, organizing a day long of talks, we actually have a network that's organizing these monthly events that showcase the talent coming out of the city.
Okay, so I want to talk about culture, because I think Sia made a really important point about, you know, your Zen-like, your ability, how you energize a room. You are now hiring. There's a lot of startups who listen to this. I think culture is a very difficult thing as you're hiring. So as you're meeting these people, how are you matching up? Like, what are the qualifications that you're looking for so that you know, all right, I've built this. It's been successful because of, you know, partly you. How do you duplicate that and make sure you're qualifying these people that culture is maintaining and that energy is maintaining as each event happens, as it grows quickly?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would start by pointing out that we have four core values that are very, very strong within Founders Live. I speak about them. Our city leaders speak about them. And I'll list them off real quick. And then these are the things that when we look for people, should be a match or not. And I think it just self-selects. But first one is respectful authenticity, which really means being your authentic self at whether you're at an event or online. But the counter to that is you have to respect others and their authentic self. So the result of this becomes inclusion. And our industry specifically has some challenges around, you know, equality, inclusion, and all this. And what we say is, if we can all just be respectfully authentic, then hopefully we can make or at least have an experience that people feel accepted and included. So that's number one. Second is what we call gather around the campfire. So this is really around storytelling. And, you know, as early stage entrepreneurs, if you are now hitting the market and, you know, either in front of a crowd or in a room talking to investors, you need to be able to tell a story. And you need to be able to tell a story that inspires people to follow you either as an employee or as an investor or a customer, you know? So, you know, we just use the term, you know, gather around the campfire, just like, you know, sitting around, hanging around with friends, maybe having a beer, telling stories.
It's a very warm connotation. It's a very warm image that you've pulled together.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. Thirdly, open the door. And that really is about doing great things for people without expecting a return. So introductions, like, you know, even just like helping another founder. And this is a very big one for me. I've gotten to the place where I'm at because people have done great things for me and introduced me to people that I never would have met before. And I ask that everyone just turn around and do that. And the last one is no name tags. And that really is just an example of, you know, it ties into Founders Live is fun. It's cool. It's casual. And I think when you have a networking event, you know, I'm using air quotes, I think a lot of people traditionally think about a very staunchy, very stiff, very uncomfortable event. And we're not that. And so you'll never walk into a Founders Live room with a name tag slapped onto your chest. That's really awkward, especially if you're a woman. And
you know, I was just going to say, there's nothing more fun than seeing eyeballs searching for your name tag.
We call that out. I mean, it's like, come on. So, you know, so those four things are there and predominant. And when we look for city leaders, those are either very apparent and shared values or they're not. And as we put those out, what's amazing is people self-select, and people that want to be a city leader are like, this is awesome. I want to talk. I totally want to bring this to our community. And people that aren't into it, they just don't respond. So I think, you know, I would tie this into when a startup is looking to hire, figure out what's important to your organization. And
state it clearly. Right. Don't just have it as, oh, we, you know, if you don't put those down on paper and specifically on your site and whatever, you know, they're not important. And if you put those out, you're going to attract others that share those values.
Yeah. And not just put them out, but actually live them.
Live them. And one thing I found, you know, obviously I'm in a kind of a unique situation and I'm in front of crowds a lot, but say them, vocalize them. That, like, I made it a point to talk about it all the time. And now it's become like more tangible. So I would encourage founders to figure out their core values and talk about them, address them. And, you know, when you have all hands meetings, talk about them. When you have interviews, talk about them. It's huge.
Oh, it absolutely makes sense. Well, let's be honest. As humans, I think, what do they say? You have to say something three times over and over again. Or if you're a parent, apparently.
Oh, that's like 300 times.
Yeah. And it may or may not stick, but but consistency and discipline, right? And I think when we're talking about startups, we're talking about having the discipline to wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to do XYZ, whatever it might be. So, Nick, we talked about this earlier. Yeah. You are extraordinarily a disciplined person. I can feel it off you, and I'm almost kind of inspired. I hate to say it. I'm lackadaisical on a lot of things, but you've got something going on. I think it's an it factor, but something tells me it's not an it factor. You being you isn't a happenstance accident. Mm-hmm. Help me understand what you do to make yourself this disciplined, zen-like individual that you are.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, over definitely a learning experience over time. But I have read some things and worked with some people that have brought to my attention that intention. So notice those difference of words, but it was brought to my attention that having intention around your day and your mentality and how you approach a day is everything. And so, you know, you've learned that I start my day a very specific way. And I will be honest and say it's not every morning, but it's the goal is most mornings, which is I touch on four things. So when I wake up, I meditate, and I learned this a handful of years ago. I never was into meditation, and, you know, I always thought it was kind of weird. And it's just, you know, being in the Western world, you know, and in the US, it's just not generally accepted. And that's the mistake, because it's huge. And so, you know, just 10, 20 minutes a morning, putting myself in a mindset of, you know, not only peace and just allow my mind to relax, but also what the intention of what I want to put out in the world that day. And it really affected how I approach the day and just the calmness of it. And then secondly, I wake up, I'll have coffee, and if it's the right day, like, I'll sit down and be able to just kind of digest some information, you know, just like read what's going on in our industry. I have newsletters and things that I hit most days, and I'm just allowing myself not only to have coffee because I love coffee. I'm from Seattle, if you're listening, but also just information, right? Mm-hmm. Get me going. My mind starts like chugging along. And then thirdly, you know, I'd like to get a workout in most days. Even if I'm on the road, which we can talk about in a second, that's why I'm here. I'm on a world tour right now, so I'm traveling. But I go out and get a run in or a workout. That is just me expending energy and also staying healthy physically. And then lastly, you know, after I get ready and whatnot, get a quality nutrition, eat a good, like, something quality in the, you know, whether it's like eggs or some sort of shake or whatever. Okay. Look at what I just did. Four things. So spiritual, intellectual, physical, and then nutrition. And man, you do that, that's an hour and a half to 2 hours, and you're ready to go. And it feels like you already accomplished a lot, right? And so that really helps me set my day and my intention. And I think what you've pointed out is I have – the result is there is an energetic flow to how I go about the day that is influenced by doing that. And it's because I'm happy. I am, I'm hitting the areas of health that need to be, attended to, so that I'm not, I don't know. Like, I just, I'm, the more I learn about life. It is about energy and the flow and how you are present in the world. And because I do that in the morning, I feel like just, I don't know. There's just no frustration around me. Well, I'm happy.
I was just going to ask, are you a Garrett White fan?
Do you know who
that is? No. Okay. Very similar model.
Going to need to research.
Yeah. You'd like him.
And also with that 7 habits of highly successful people and all that stuff. I mean, every single successful leader that I've ever talked to pretty much meditate. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting your spiritual side, getting your mental side, getting your physical, as well as what you put into your body. I mean, your body is an engine.
Yeah.
And this is the irony of all, because I'm the worst hypocrite, because I enjoy my wine. Let's just say that's my extra fuel that oftentimes makes me have to reconsider how I'm doing the other three.
Yeah.
But I mean, so having that level of discipline, being that you can do this consistently, this has got to be a way for Founders Live to grow. I mean, right now, the focus is for early startups, right? Yep. To embrace this kind of mentality, but also have the ability to communicate with one another. Have you looked at how to better include more maybe investors into Founders Live or corporations who might be interested in those startups?
Yes, we have. And when we look at this, I'll explain it in phases, right? And as we grow. So we're kind of in the crux of phase one to phase two, but this early phase is really to have the reaches all around the world. You know, we're still putting our stakes in the ground, right? And, you know, we're 35 cities, but I think we can end the year 75 to 100 cities. The goal is to be in hundreds of cities because there are communities all around the world that are doing very amazing things. And there's talented teams and people that need to be, you know, yes, it's 2019, there's LinkedIn, there's Facebook, blah, 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 but they're still not connected in the way that I think they could be. So we still have a long game to, you know, establish the global platform in a way that it should be. So that's still phase one is growth and expansion, you know, just getting people online. Phase two is now starting to bring in the resources and the capital that are required for early stage companies to grow. And that's going to be, it's not easy. And the reason why it's not easy is because in terms of funding, you know, you can look at what type of funding should it be, you know, all the angel groups and all the cities, but that is like every single city is its different little animal. And when we're in hundreds of cities, like how do we do that appropriately? And I do think organically it's going to happen because at Founders Live events, no matter what city, there's usually angel investors that are like, hey, well, this is interesting. I'm kind of poking around here. But to involve like the local angel community in a way more important, like a very more specific way, we will do that. You know, traditional VCs, they're usually looking at a little farther along, you know, series A, B, C. So not necessarily sure how we would include at this point. We will look at that, but at some point there would be a venture capital more focused. Thirdly, and then I'll touch on corporations because that's kind of a different topic.
Yeah.
But we, you know, I just have this weird gut feeling that there will be a new funding model that we either will create and or implement that could it be crowdfunding?
Yeah, so
I can't wait to listen to this at some point in the future, but when we are reaching millions of people around the world and we are highlighting, you know, thousands of startups maybe a month that are coming from like Barcelona, Buenos Aires, Nairobi, Kenya, Seattle, Dallas, New York, everything. Imagine people being able to choose to fund because they like the concept and they discovered this on Founders Live to fund it with $100 or $1,000 or $10,000 crowdfunding.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, you know, just regulation wise. But we will. And so we're looking at how we can do that. The question is that traditional or is that like a cryptocurrency, given that those things might, you know, continue to become more generally accepted and legal. So we're looking at that. You know, I think that that's a really, really interesting model. And I don't know what that looks like, but I can tell you that the first 500,000 is still very, very difficult. And I think that that's wrong. Like, I think every startup in the world should be able to get to a point of proof if you can make it or not. But if you have a problem just getting enough capital to actually operate, that's a big problem, right? Yeah. And we need to solve that because there is tremendous amount of money and capital around the world, but it's not moving efficiently. And so if we can help early stage companies at least get to up and running to then prove if they're a viable business over time, I think we've done a very great thing.
Can you talk more about the whole crowdfunding thing? Because it's interesting you brought that up. I was actually involved with someone that sounded like we were dating, but we weren't. But I was helping someone who was building that sort of model. And last year, honestly, it was an execution problem versus an ability problem. So what sort of obstacles are you seeing in that to be able to create that crowdfunding capability?
Yeah. Well, again, like I said, the regulations are still really tight.
Yeah.
You know, and so outside of like Kickstarter or Indiegogo from like the kind of loose project oriented, more artistic usually models. And those are really just donations. Those are not equity crowdfunding. You know, there's that. But when you look at equity crowdfunding, it's still just a pool of angels mostly, right? So you still have to be accredited. And I still think that that's the barrier and that's the problem. So one, I think regulations are still like, they're still too tight and we're not, we just don't even want to deal with that. But secondly, I think you now, let's say regulations are open, you know, what does the equity look like? Who holds it? So let's say there's 1,000 people that put in money to total $500,000 of a crowdfunded round. Well, is it 1,000 people on the cap table? Is it one entity that then has been an LLC created that all 1,000 people are a part of and members of? That's still a challenge. Like, what happens? We don't know. So I think that's a problem. But I would just say this, and I think this is the overused example, but you can go to Vegas and throw $50,000 on tables and games and lose it or win it. But you can't, like, general people cannot do that to support entrepreneurship and be a part of private companies. Like, that is a problem. I think that is ridiculous. So our hope is that over time, I don't know if we could be a part of it or we at least hit the wave at the right way as we've grown around the world. We have enough volume. The regulation thaws out and then we layer on our crowdfunding. I think we will have massive scale to then execute appropriately. And we're not big enough yet and the regulations aren't there yet.
Because isn't it Kiva? Like, I can throw $100 at a company in Africa, get them started.
Yeah. You know, but the question is, I mean, is that a donation? I mean,
it's a loan. It's a loan. It's not an investment. It's a loan.
Right.
That's the way they were able to go.
Yeah.
Because I'm a huge Kiva advocate.
And, you know, me too. That's great. But what you want to look at is how does all this come together where I think equity ownership. And I think once this opens up to the world, I think it changes a lot. It helps early stage companies grow. It provides people diversity in their portfolio and their ability to invest in early stage companies. I think it's amazing, but we have a lot. There's a lot. So
yeah.
So where we sit right now is I'm happily growing Founders Live, looking out in the distance saying there's something out there. And I don't know if it's 2 years down the road. I don't know if it's 5 years down the road, but we'll continue to grow and be in an even better position when that happens. Yeah.
I feel like I got to say this, though. Like, this is where I'm really passionate about entrepreneurship in the sense of I love the fact of raising money and pooling money for more money, which is great. But I feel like, too, and what I'd love for you to see you do, but hold entrepreneurs more responsible, too, of that money. Because I feel like we've become a society where we're celebrating raises, but we're not celebrating what they do with those raises.
You're right.
And it makes me very upset because it's like, okay, you got $1 million. What did you do with it? And we look at companies like the Amazon, like the Ubers, like that continually needed to raise and raise and raise and weren't profitable. But I think those are the exceptions to the rule. And I feel like we need to make companies and these entrepreneurs who are raising this money more responsible in how they flip that money and do something with it. But that's soapbox stepping off.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you saying that because we talk about the same thing. look, officially on, I will state it. I don't think most entrepreneurs should raise traditional funding. Yeah. I don't. You know what I think you should do? I think you should get to work and build your company. So know what, how to create revenue, determine your business models, execute them, grow your revenue to the point where you can actually, like, that's called bootstrapping. And yeah. Oh, by the way, the history of business in the United States really does sit on traditional growth of a company. You know, it's self-funded, what you would call bootstrapped, up to the point where they're just basically funding the company through, mm-hmm. Customers and a business model.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you're a founder listening, I would encourage you to really think about, if I could never raise investment, how will I grow this company? And if you do that, what's amazing is you not only will have a strong business as you grow, but you will be even more attractive to investors, which then you'll be able to choose if you want to take growth capital or not. But I have been around many founders that they're just focused on, need to raise an angel round, need to raise money, and it's like, why not get to work and fund it in the most traditional way, which is through customers. And sometimes that's not as possible. But I think having that mental exercise, it puts you in the best position. I mean, that's what I've done with Founders Live. It's the tougher road, but it makes you a better entrepreneur.
I think it just gives you that much more solid foundation, yes. Right? Because you've established that actually is a true need. You've mentioned in another interview, and it just absolutely struck me, is how many businesses are startups, have not proven their product is even needed in the marketplace. Oh. And we get up in our own heads of, but if I build it, it will come.
Yeah.
Right? How many times have you gone to these cities now and you've seen these pitches where you just look at it and say, that's a rock star, that's a business that's going to make it? And how many times have you seen it where you're like, wow, how do we help them?
Yeah. You know, I don't know if it's half. I don't know if it's a third in terms of basically the question of like, what are they really doing? I mean, every so often there's just an idea where it's like, oh man, you or woman, you're really scratching your own itch and you haven't gone out to the market and established, is this a need on a widespread level? But yeah, I would just say, just to kind of go off the point that you heard me talk about in another show, you know, the very, very first thing to do when you have an idea and you're ready, that you might even have an early team of co-founders, with the least amount of code and time possible, figure out a way to go out and prove that people need this. And whether that's like creating a prototype on Envision that is simply like wireframes that you've pasted together and you have people manipulate it. Maybe you just do a questionnaire for like 100 or 200 people and you do face-to-face interviews and you actually are gathering the data that they're like, yes, this is a problem. Next, you have a very simple prototype or a very simple early stage minimum viable product. Get people using it, right? And that's what I did with Founders Live. As you know, this whole thing has grown organically and I listened to the market. When I said, you know, 5 years ago, I just put on the event and I kept holding the event and I observed the market and I was like, okay, there's interest here. And then when I rolled out the early form version of Founders Live, people started jumping on and using it. And gathering the data from the market then proved to me, and as I started to talk to more founders and entrepreneurs, they're like, we need this. And all of a sudden the snowball took. But I didn't invest a ton of money into it. I only just put time of research and growth and execution to learn, you know. But the opposite of that is sit in a small room, work with your team, establish the idea, hack on the product, invest $500,000 or $1 million, and then take it to market, and then pray and hope that people want it and use it. That's a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, and I see people too, to your point, I think it's very important to point out, you listened to the market. Yes. I've seen even startups do this where, like you said, they're scratching their own itch and they're so dead centered on scratching that particular itch that they don't listen to customers when they say, okay, your itch might be your thigh, but I'm going to tell you right now, you're kind of in the right area, but if you go more towards the knee, you're going to hit the nail on the head, but they're so stuck. No, 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 no. It has to be this way. And they dig their own grave because they won't listen.
Yeah.
And I think it's just important
I would encourage founders to be a little less. Look, you can be excited and passionate and, you know, really focused on what you want to accomplish, but don't be so tied to a specific idea that you don't acknowledge what the market's telling you. I would assume most entrepreneurs, you just want growth. You'd want to see your product service used more and more times for more and more people or companies. The only way to get there is to actually listen to the market in a unemotional way so that they can tell you, oh, you're right over here, but this, this, and this, if you change that, then we would use it. And if you just change that and all of a sudden you see growth, you're like, wow. But if you think you're a B2C concept and you're not listening to the market that's B2B, that's like, we need this.
Right.
You're lost and you're too married to the concept. You're too tied into, quote, what you want to see in the world versus what the world needs. Yeah. Right.
So what you're talking about actually is something that I've seen at corporations, right? So there is a certain amount of, I think, lack of innovation or stagnation when you get into that cog, if you will.
There's and, big cogs there.
Yeah, big old cogs. You can actually hear the rust like running like those gears. But so let's talk about this because I don't think we had a chance to touch on it, which is, so if I were a major corporation and I am trying to innovate, I've got an innovation lab, I can't get the right resources because who the heck's going to think that my traditional business is going to be the leader in IoT, for example? So could you help me understand where you envision how Founders Live can actually help corporations embrace innovation embrace that entrepreneurial spirit?
I think there's two ways. One would be more or less through the energy and kind of the education and the things that are happening organically that are popping up through Founders Live, both online as well as the events. Just from a mental or intellectual perspective. That's number one. Number two is more tangible, and I'll hit the number two first. So I think just from a number standpoint, if you think about if we're in 100 cities, which we will be in by the end of the year, maybe early next year, that means like numbers wise, 400 or 500 new early stage companies are pitching through Founders Live every single month.
Wow. Yeah.
So at some point, this becomes such a massive tsunami of creative innovation and ideas that are popping up around the world. As we build more of a system and a database around that, said corporation, whatever focus they have, whether it's like IoT, you know, AI, machine learning, you know, connectivity, communication. They'll be able to go through Founders Live and be able to search and pretty much say like, oh, geez, like in the last quarter, there's been 50 companies orienting from, and they could maybe segment it to like South America or North America or Europe. So they can then peer into Founders Live in this, like what we're doing is we're basically indexing the globe of early stage innovation and creativity. And so then they can look in and say, who is this company? What are they working on? Let's get in touch with them. Do we maybe want to partner with them? Do we want to acquire them, right? So I think that is a very important point to think about is how we can essentially connect the two in a very unique way. As we start live streaming all these, clearly as a corporation, you should probably pay attention to it, see what's going on, and be able to be the first to contact that company and work with them or acquire them. So that's number one. This will be just a massive talent acquisition pool, whether that's, you know, acquisition of a corporation, acquisition of, very interesting and talented people, that sort of thing. But the other side I would say is as we continue to grow, you know, we call it Founders Live for a reason. And obviously it's, you know, pitch events but live things that happen online, excuse me. And, as a corporation, I think it might be valuable to stick around Founders Live just to kind of through osmosis, continue to be in that very early stage, innovative, energetic mindset that might rub off on people that are working in a corporation that then could actually like take that back to their little, you know, skunk works like team that are creating you know, their innovation within the corporation. Because I think the mentality is quite different as an entrepreneur and someone that's like waking up every day, like hacking and hustling and just really like with minimal like investment, creating something of value. Corporations usually have massive budget, but that tends to not sometimes help efficient creation to take it to market because there's bloated time frames and bloated, you know.
Well, politics, let's be honest. Politics. There's some bureaucracy and politics right. in that mix, right? So, I mean, innovation has a tendency to introduce change of which corporations, again, if they are established, don't ruffle the feathers.
Well, think about
saying? Waters.
Yeah, no, think about it. Like, if a check off or an okay needs to go up the chain, it might take weeks to get an answer to a question where today the founder got the answer today and moved on it. Like literally
did
like,
something. Yeah.
We're talking about weeks or months of time frame difference. And that might be the window of opportunity that you just missed. And so I think, yeah, just through, you know, being around the energy and the information through Founders Live as we continue to grow around the world, it makes sense, you know, for corporations to just stick around, listen, and maybe like take a little of that back.
So I'm super excited that you are in 35 cities. When you mentioned Nairobi, I'm like, I want to go. Please take me with you. Can I just be a pretend? Let me just be a reporter as you travel the world. But I guess help me understand, of the cities that you've been to so far, have you seen vast differences regionally between the entrepreneurs? Or are you seeing a consistency in our behaviors?
You know, I would – it's more consistent. It's more consistent than not, which – so I – you know, I announced a world tour in December. Long story short, life circumstances happened and I found myself a little more free man than I was before. And it's been the best thing ever. So I announced this world tour. I'm literally on the road traveling to Founders Live cities the entire year of 2019, maybe longer. And so that means 12 cities over 12 or 12 regions over 12 months. And living in those cities, attending the events, working with our teams and meeting the entrepreneurs. And it's been fascinating. And I'm only I'm not even 4 months through this and it's totally changed my life. And what's really cool is, you know, one of my theses was I'm going to go and experience what entrepreneurship is like in all these cities and, you know, meet the people and really see how they're similar and how they're different. I would say the majority of us are the same. I think the focus on certain things are different. You know, every city and region has a little bit different, like a little different focus. You know, Seattle is very enterprise, SaaS companies, very much B2B, very much cloud, you know, AI. Those are highly
a lot tech. Of tech.
A lot of tech, yeah. Technology, but like B2B tech. You know, being in California, specifically Southern California, it's a little more B2C. And obviously in LA, it's just like, you know, different focus on that. You know, coming into Dallas, I haven't been here long enough to really take a full grasp, but just kind of seeing how the city and the communities are definitely different. And, you know, some entrepreneurial communities are more established than others or have a volume or activity level that's significant versus others. Like I was in Boise, Idaho in January, you know, which, you know, this trip is
growing. Yeah,
it's growing, you know, but it's cool to like structure this trip to, you know, go into certain cities and, you know, Boise is just still getting going. It's really cool. But, you know, they have like food tech. Specifically because their history with like, you know, potatoes and all the stuff in that direction, a lot of agriculture there.
I was gonna say like the rural farming technologies.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. But later this year, I'll definitely go over to Africa. I'll be in Nairobi. I'll be in Zimbabwe, South Africa, and I'm really excited. So I can't tell you exactly what's going on there yet, but they have a lot of ag tech and a lot of communications as well because it's all mobile. But they're still working through what mobile means and how they use that efficiently. So I'm just excited to meet the people and see what's going on in other parts of the world.
Well, I just think the potential of what Founders Live can actually represent to entrepreneurs is the fact that, okay, so I'm in Nairobi, not exactly known for, you know, let's say best hair dye formula ever, but it could actually be a world-changing, life-changing product, right? And if it's someone that doesn't look in that area traditionally for that particular product, they can actually source it. Like you say, like you become that repository of all these entrepreneurs. And if I'm a Clairol, I don't know, I'm totally making this stuff up online. I'm so half-assing.
But this could be good. Yeah. This could be really good.
I mean, but if you think there's like, there might be a future root out there that's going to give you that, you know, never go gray kind of thing. And you know, you're lucky you're a guy, you can't go gray. It's charming, but women, it's not. So, I mean, I think that's some value there. And I think that's why when I initially heard about you, I got super excited to say, holy, you know, smokes, Dallas. I've called, you know, is not a primary, you know, first tier city when it comes to, let's say, certain technologies, right? We have a good technology area, but Austin seems to surpass Dallas when it comes to technology, right? But we have tons of corporations coming in here. All businesses, as you said it over and over, and Aaron, is all corporations are technology companies, whether they want to admit to it or not, right? So if, I guess, Aaron, I mean, I just wanted to keep going and talking to you about this.
No, I could talk about this all day. I could. But so, I know we have a time limit.
I know. So have you ever had seen someone where you're just looking at them and you're thinking, how do we help guide you in a different direction? Or have you just stood back and said, like, good luck to you? I mean, you see so much. Yeah. I mean, has there any time where you just look at someone like American Idol style where you're like Simon Cowell, you're like, dude, no, this is not for you. William Hung. Oh, yeah. We've met William Hung too.
Wow. You know, I mean, the answer is yes, but I come from it this way. You know, who am I to tell them that their idea sucks?
100%. Yes.
Okay. Here's what I can help them. I hope that I can at least, yes, nudge them or point them in a direction. So I'm kind of giving away my secret now, but I do think a great decision is to simply show them, just go talk to 100 people.
Yeah.
And the 100 people will then tell them that their idea sucks rather than one person. Because if one person, whether it's me or anyone else, I don't, like, I might have biases. I might not know the market. I might say this idea is terrible, but it might be actually really good for the specific market. So I think what I try to do is just, like, I try to lead people to, you know, find growth and development in one way or another. And usually when they get hit upside the head too many times, they're going to realize, okay, like, this is actually not working. My advice though is I had an experience. This was like my first startup was in 2011, and no need to talk too much on it, but you know, I think we held on too long and it really didn't go anywhere. And I would encourage founders to cycle through this whole process fairly quickly. And when I mean fairly quickly, I would say, I think 6 months to, you know, 6 months to probably 12 at the highest 18 months is where you want it. That's, you know, from start, ideation, market testing, blah, 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 maybe a quick MVP. You know, I think that should process on the short time frame is probably a 6 month process to on the high end, 18 months to then figure out if you've got growth or not. And by the end of that period, you either have the, like, whoa, this is like working feeling, because you have indicators of like your metrics are growing up and to the right. You're seeing the market response is overwhelming. If you don't have those feelings, you should probably cut it, because I've seen too many founders and startups stick way too long on an idea that they're literally wasting their life.
It's like a hamster wheel.
You are, and I'm trying not to be too rude, but if you think about it, if you're spending time over here and yes, hamster wheel, wasting your life, what opportunities are you not getting over here that could all maybe be a well-paying job, maybe the new startup, a new company, but you don't have mind space for it because you're just dragging on the ground. And I've experienced that. And I just try to help people cycle through quickly enough that they can cut their ties. Look, entrepreneurship's hard. I've failed a lot. This is like the first thing that I've really been a part of that's like, okay, this is going to be a big thing. I've been a part of stuff that didn't work. It's totally fine. But make sure that you cut the cord at appropriate time so that you can recover and go on to the next thing.
It's definitely easier said than done.
It is, totally. And, you know, they're emotionally attached to it. Yeah. They think, oh, this, if we just change this on the website, it's going to work.
if I give it up, it's going to be a I'm going to be a failure.
Yeah. No, yeah. Do not believe that. It's okay to cycle through ideas and concepts. I think the failure is working on something for 10 years that ended up not working, that failed.
And well, ignoring the opportunities exactly. of doors that were open, and you're like, sorry, I got to keep on this.
So on that note, then, it sounds like to me, and I heard this as well and I'm impressed by, is mentorship and coaching. You had mentioned an idea about I wrote it down as Rubik's Cube. Could you help me understand what that means in the context of a mentor or a coach when you're looking at a cube?
Yeah, I think if I think what you're pointing at,
this is a really interesting point, which is
I've only been video stalking you and stuff. Okay.
Well, if you think about Rubik's Cube, first of all, you might be imagining like a cube with a lot of colors, right? Like dots, but a fully formed Rubik's Cube would be on one side one color, one side fully another color, right? But the problem is it's really an amazing thought process where you might be like, okay, and you're looking at it's green, right? And you're like, well, it's a green cube. The whole thing is green. And you're just like, yep, it's green. I'm stubborn. It's green. And what's so crazy is when you bring an advisor or mentor around you to help you see new perspectives, they will literally, like, imagine if they took it and they're like, they just turned it and were like, no, this side is blue and this side is yellow. But because your perspective as a person that's so focused on this, all you saw was the green side. And I think that's what advisors and mentors come alongside and help you to see another side of the cube that you actually physically could not even see, or logically could not see, because you were just looking at one side of the cube, right? So that's the way I view life, and I view entrepreneurship, is there are various sides of this cube. They are different colors because they have different, you know, aspects to them, and different, you know, there's different ways to accomplish the same thing. So if you bring advisors around, they're going to help turn that cube for you and say, no, look, it's this. And here's maybe another way to check, to approach this. And man, that's helped me a lot to see just different perspectives of the cube and go about things in a different way that, you know, maybe a couple of years ago I didn't even think about.
I love that analogy. That's why I wanted to bring it up. Because it actually was one of those things where it was like a little light bulb moment for me. I'm like, oh, son of a sea cook. That would be many times in my life where I'm insistent upon something. And, you know, I've had mentors tell me, like, slow your roll, sunshine, and let's reevaluate what we're looking at.
Yeah, and, you know, just to add one more thing is there's a trait that's great as an entrepreneur, but it also is a double-edged sword. And your trait is you can be so bullheaded and focused and even stubborn.
I don't know who you're talking about, but other entrepreneurs.
Clearly, in this room, of course.
I'm talking about myself, for sure. It is an amazing trait. It gets you, you know, you can plow through walls and you can, like, you know, just make things happen. But that trait is also what I just talked about, which is you can have very narrow focus. You know, your viewpoints on the market or just ecosystem in general can be very clouded. And so I would encourage people to just, like, understand that about yourself and know that if you bring other people around, be open to what they're saying. There is always other ways to achieve it, like, always. And it's okay to accept those alternatives, evaluate them, and figure out what the right path is, knowing that you can use a combination of everything. But just know if you're an entrepreneur, you're probably bullheaded and you need to recognize that.
Recognize.
Yeah. With that, I mean, this has been awesome. Like, I know I said earlier, I could talk about this for hours.
Oh,
I
me
love
too.
These conversations. If somebody wanted to find out more about Founders Live, where should they go?
Yeah, founderslive.com, just like Saturday Night Live. So founderslive.com. You can find me on either on Founders Live. You can message me there. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, all the general, even Instagram. So feel free to reach out. And
And on Founders Live, if they go there, it's a free community, right? They can join. They can be part of it like that.
Yep, free community. Check it out. Just takes a few little details to join, but it's great. And then, you know, I think just one thing to do is, you know, if you want to search Founders Live, your city, you know, we're in 35 cities globally. So at some point as we grow, it'll definitely probably pop up, but look for Founders Live in your city. And on founderslive.com, you can find those as well.
Is there a cadence that, like, first Tuesday of every month, or is it just depends?
Totally depends on a city. Okay. But these are meant to be monthly events. They're usually every month or every other month in all these cities. And yeah, we're excited to continue to grow.
Okay. And if I wanted to become a city leader, that same route to contact you as well is to look up Founders Live?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty liberal with my email. So it's nick@founderslive.com. It's pretty simple. So feel free to reach out, say hi. And yes, if someone is interested in wanting to launch a city and or launch Founders Live in their city, reach out to me. We'll have some phone calls and interviews and we'll see if it's the right fit.
Awesome. Right. Nick, appreciate your time. Aaron, did you have any more questions?
I do not.
Thank you. This has been great. Really enjoyed it.
I am so stoked for you. And again, if you ever need any help to go to Africa, I have no problems dumping Aaron and doing innovation calling from remote.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, she would dump me for sure.
So anyway, that wraps up for another wonderful conversation at Innovation Calling. Thank you again, Nick.
Thank you.